Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Bonus blowback is sweeping over Washington and the country this week. But there's something else going on, too, in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Newark, L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, Alexandria, Virginia. Federal criminal prosecutors have been poring for months now over emails and corporate records, looking for evidence not just of outrageous behavior, but of crime. And not just at AIG, but across Wall Street and beyond. Enron's top officials once learned how this works. Will Wall Street's learn it? Should they? This hour, On Point, the case for criminal prosecution and the cautions that come with it. You can join the conversation. Do you see grounds for criminal prosecution in our great financial meltdown? Where? For what? Do handcuffs have a place here or not? We will hear in this hour from Iowa's Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, who this week called for resignations and suicide at AIG. He now says what he really meant is remorse. We'll hear him out. But joining me first today from New York is Roger Parloff. He's a senior editor at Fortune magazine and a former criminal litigation attorney. He wrote Fortune's cover story a few weeks back, Wall Street, It's Payback Time. And he's written recently on how the government might stop the AIG bonuses. Roger Parloff, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And with us from Columbia, Missouri, is Frank Bowman. He's a professor of law at the University of Missouri Law School, former deputy director, district attorney in Denver, Colorado. He also worked as a prosecutor for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern Florida, where he specialized in complex white-collar crime. Frank Bowman, welcome to On Point.
Glad to be here, Tom. Thank you.
You've been in the trenches. You've worked with a lot of white-collar crime. Should handcuffs be on the table here, Frank Bowman?
Well, I think the answer is certainly yes, if the case is warranted. And I think there are going to be a fair number of criminal prosecutions arising, generally speaking, out of the economic situation in which we find ourselves. And I think that Roger has enumerated a lot of circumstances in his very fine article that under which those prosecutions might happen. I mean, first of all, there's just going to be an awful lot of garden variety fraud that is going to be uncovered here. I mean, from the high end of Bernie Madoff and other kinds of Ponzi schemes to, you know, a variety of other kinds of things, insider trading, ordinary forms of stock fraud, all the sorts of things that are always going on, particularly in a long bull market, but don't get exposed. I mean, as the saying goes, you only find out who's naked when the swimming naked when the tide goes out, and there's a lot of stuff going on out there that is simply, in the natural course of things, going to get discovered.
You say garden variety, but the dollar figures are so big here, and federal sentencing guidelines, if it should come to that, if it should come to that, very often link the length of a prison term to the size of the financial loss to the public. That could mean life sentences here, Mr. Bowman.
Well, certainly that's what the guidelines are going to call for an awful lot of these cases. I mean, under the guidelines right now, the way they're currently structured, and particularly in light of changes that were made post-Enron and post-Sarbanes-Oxley, if you're a CEO of a publicly traded corporation and you engage in some crime that involves securities fraud, if the loss is about $2.5 million or higher, which is greater scheme of things, a fairly small amount, the guidelines call for a life sentence. We've scaled the guideline sentences up that high. Now, I think it's rather unlikely that anyone's actually going to be sentenced to life, you know, an actual mandatory life term, but the terms of years that are called for by the guidelines, and which were handed out during the Enron era by a lot of judges, amount to life sentences for executives, most of whom are going to be in their 50s or 60s when they're convicted.
Roger Parloff, there's many kinds of cases here, and we want to look at some of them with you. I guess the big question that you point to at the bottom of this, as investigations crank up, go on, as subpoenas go out, is looking back at the high-flying Wall Street years and the question of whether or not top officials who stepped in front of microphones or put pen to paper or wrote emails were lying
through their teeth or they believed in the businesses they were in. A lot is going to boil down to that question, will it not, Roger?
Yeah, that's right. You know, every quarter the CEO has to make a statement to the shareholders, and as the economy gets worse and worse, that becomes a more ticklish thing to do. You don't want to say, yeah, we're in real trouble, we could go down. But on the other hand, if you don't tell the strict truth, if you gild the lily a little, try to get through a rough spot, you're definitely committing civil fraud. And if the company does end up in bankruptcy, you could be prosecuted for criminal fraud. So sort of one of the obvious places to begin was a lot of these statements that were made in earnings conferences and also the written statements in the SEC filings. Mm-hmm. That's where you begin, because a lot of those were wildly off, and sometimes they were off within hours. More often, they were off within months. But that's one place to begin that certainly justifies sending out the subpoenas. Then once you get emails, then you have something to compare the public statements to. What were they saying to one another in private conversations? Compare that to what was being said to shareholders. Mm. And if there's a huge discrepancy, there's a possibility of a securities fraud.
Of course, we saw this back in the Internet era where you had investment banks pushing stock in public and in their emails saying, what a dog, I can't believe it. This is, you know, who would invest in this? Roger, help us start at AIG. We'll move out from there. But you've got the Attorney General of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who has been quite visible and pushing here with subpoenas, first for the list of recipients of these bonuses that everybody's talking about these days. And I guess he's trying to figure out whether there could be, what, fraud here? Because AIG agreed to the bonuses early last year despite multi-billion dollar losses that it did or should have known would have prevented those from being paid out of its rapidly turning red coffers, Roger.
Yeah, in fairness, I think that Cuomo has done a very valuable service to us in terms of transparency, just shining sunlight on the documents, finding mm-hmm. out what's really going on. He has not had a record of actually following up and doing lots of nitty-gritty criminal prosecutions. So I don't know how seriously to take those sorts of threats with respect to the bonuses. AIG's real problems will probably go back earlier to statements made in mid-2007 and late 2008 about their credit default swap portfolio. Their financial products unit, which is the one that really brought the company down and is weighing the country down.
And is receiving bonuses, pretty big ones, as of Friday.
Yes.
Last Friday.
That's, mm-hmm. The head of that unit made public statements that he didn't see a way of that they could lose a dollar on these portfolios. Now, the problem was that it wasn't as preposterous as a statement as it sounds, because they were insuring these bonds, and it turns out that even if the bonds didn't actually default, a lot of these bonds have not defaulted even today. Mm. The trouble was that even if they don't default, if the threat of default becomes great enough, then AIG had to cough up these billions of dollars in collateral payments to protect the other party. Mm-hmm. And that in itself could destroy the company. And that's what was not really being clearly stated to the shareholders. And the question will be, over time, as that began to become clear to everybody, were they clear enough? Did they know? Did they say what they knew?
Frank Bowman, of course, it turns out it's not just the risk of destroying the company. It has ultimately torn a great big hole in the public purse as well. People are talking now about regulation, more regulation. But you've said that's not really enough.
Well, what I've said in the past, largely in the wake of the Enron scandals, mm-hmm. is that criminal prosecution is an important part of a complete package of public policy approaches to misbehavior, risky behavior in large corporate entities. And I think that has been true for a long time. So don't misunderstand me. Mm-hmm. What I've said is that I do think it's important that you prosecute people criminally when the facts are available to do so. But there is, in fact, a flip side risk to this, and we saw this in the response to Enron and during mm-hmm. the Sarbanes-Oxley period, is that those folks who were opposed to more sensible regulation, whether it be regulation of corporations directly or the folks that look after them, accountants, lawyers, others, mm-hmm. Often said in response to the whole Enron business, oh, well, you know, this Enron and all these other corporate scandals, they're just a result of a couple of bad apples. And if we prosecute those people, we've solved the whole problem.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the case for criminal prosecutions in the Wall Street meltdown and maybe soon at AIG. The case for and maybe the case against as well. How do you see it after all the shouting and table pounding and anger? Should we be taking people to court here on criminal charges? Do you see crimes at the root of the Wall Street meltdown or a witch hunt brewing? Should CEOs, money managers be in handcuffs in the dock? Would that be vengeance? Would that be justice? We've been talking with senior editor at Fortune magazine, Roger Parloff, and Frank Bowman, professor at University of Missouri Law School, former deputy district attorney in Denver, Colorado. He's done a lot with white-collar crime. Big hearings in Washington today and anger all over. One, a very senior figure in Washington who made a lot of waves with his comments earlier this week was Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, saying on radio in Iowa earlier this week, the top officials here ought to be thinking about the Japanese response to this whole situation, resignation and suicide. His aides have said, well, that's rhetorical. What he really wants to hear is remorse. Let's ask him. Senator Grassley joins us from Washington. Senator Chuck Grassley, thanks very much for being here.
Oh, I'm always glad to be with NPR.
It's great to have you. Do you see us on a path to getting this whole AIG bonus mess worked out, first of all, or not?
I think two things are going right now. One is legislation that Senator Baucus and I recently introduced, a bipartisan agreement, that would tax by the corporation 35% of the value of the bonuses, and at the individual level, 35%. And then the second track is what the president has ordered Secretary Geithner to do, to go after it in any legal way he could. We think that we can recoup this money one way or the other. There is the constitutional question of contractual relations being protected by the Constitution. I'm a farmer. I'm not a lawyer. I've got to leave that up to the judicial branch of government. But we wrote our legislation in a way that we think is constitutional.
New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo subpoenaed a bunch of information about these bonuses, and he's said to be trying to figure out, Senator Grassley, whether AIG committed fraud in agreeing to these bonuses early last year, despite huge losses that they should have, maybe could have foreseen, prevented these things from being paid.
Well, General Cuomo, if he wins on that point, then there's no question about going after this money, that it would be considered ill-gotten money, and the contractual obligation that the Constitution implies, I don't think would hold. That's what I've been told by lawyers.
And what about criminal prosecution more broadly at AIG, across Wall Street? You know, there's a lot of investigations going on now, subpoenas flying around. Do you see handcuffs in courtrooms as an appropriate response to some of what's going on here, or the wrong path?
Well, let me answer your question two ways. If people are arrested and go to the courtroom based upon evidence gathered by the FBI, then without a doubt they ought to be prosecuted. So I can agree with you 100% there. In the first place, the FBI is doing the investigation, and we have to give the people presumption of innocence. But except for those things, if something's wrong, they ought to be prosecuted. On the other hand, at the grassroots of my state of Iowa, when I meet a lot of people on the street and they just casually say every one of those people ought to be put in jail, I think it implies that at the grassroots they think that corporations got into this trouble because there was fraud and crime being broken. But whether it's crime or not, the companies have been run into the ground by their CEOs by mismanagement, and then you get back to the quote that I had yesterday. I have been saying since October the 1st, when I first said exactly what was quoted yesterday, and I don't know why it was a big deal yesterday.
You mean resignation and suicide?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What I was after there, and rhetoric, because I don't want people to take their own life, and I wouldn't be a responsible public servant if I advocated that. But we got a different corporate culture in the United States than they have in Japan, and I'm advocating that corporate executives in this country ought to have the same remorse, the same apologies, the same contriteness that Japanese corporate managers have. Some of them commit suicide, and I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting, though, the very least, go before the American people and take responsibility for running the corporation into the ground and apologize. And it may not make things better for your corporation, and maybe you shouldn't be running the corporation anymore, but if you're going to run it, it's going to make those of us in Congress, when you're begging for help from the federal government, a little more willing to do it if you accept responsibility. But I have not heard any of that.
Senator, we've only got half a minute more with you. On the corporate culture front, there's been a lot of Republican criticism of the Obama administration, how they've handled this mess with AIG and the banking system. What about the Republican Party? Did it help breed this corporate culture in the years that it was, you know, taking resources away from the SEC, pulling down regulation?
Well, I don't agree with you on pulling down regulations, but there is responsibility in the previous administration because there wasn't enough enforcement of regulation. And the reason I disagree with you on pulling down regulation is that the pulling down took place in 99 during the Clinton administration. And, in fact, you could make an argument that passing Sarbanes-Oxley after Enron, that maybe the Bush administration had over-regulation in some areas. But I would also agree with you, not enough enforcement of existing regulation.
Senator Chuck Grassley in Washington, out of Iowa. Senator, thanks very much for being with us.
God bless you.
Frank Bowman, we had to take time out for He Who Recommended Suicide, rhetorically, he says. But take us back to the slightly finer point you were making on Enron and the flip side risk in criminal prosecution, if that's what we come to, Frank.
Actually, it's a pretty good segue from Senator Grassley's remarks, because what I was going to talk about is what happened with Sarbanes-Oxley. The senator, as I understood it, at least implied that Sarbanes-Oxley might have involved over-regulation. And what you saw during the debate that followed the collapse of Enron and that led to the enactment of Sarbanes-Oxley was a very conscious strategic choice on the part of Republicans in Congress and the Bush administration, which was to emphasize the possibility or to suggest that the whole problem, that all these collapsing corporations, was the criminality of a few bad apples. And the suggestion was, well, we can fix that simply by putting these guys in jail, and the appropriate legislative response is just to raise criminal penalties. And it was a very conscious choice to try to forestall Democratic efforts in both the House and Senate to increase regulation. Now, in the end, it turns out that that did not work, that, in fact, what we got in Sarbanes-Oxley was an increase in criminal penalties and additional regulation. But I think one thing you have to watch out for, as much of an advocate for appropriate criminal prosecution as I am, I think one of the things you have to watch out for in the current political environment is people saying, oh, all we should do here is prosecute folks and then the world will be fine. We should do that, and having people suggest that we should do that rather than look at the underlying failures of the regulatory system that permitted the broader financial crisis. That's where the potential for error lies.
It may be that we'll soon be up to both. And, Roger, I want to ask you about more details on what's getting up on the rails prosecution-wise. Let's get some callers in here if we can. From Detroit, Michigan, William, you're on the air. Hi, William.
Yes, hello. I have one comment, or yeah, comment on AIG. Regarding their balance sheet, 10 years ago, if you would look at their balance sheet of AIG, you would notice that they are so far leveraged that you would wonder how a company so far leveraged would even be profitable, which would be, should be in business. Now, over the time...
Yeah? Sounds like we lost William there, but we got the point on leverage. Roger Parloff, how about it? That's a business decision. It was freed from regulation, as I understand it. They weren't outside the bounds of liberalized kind of oversight there in their leverage, but it was huge. At some point, does that feed into something criminal, or is it just bad business judgment?
Yeah, that where there was over leverage, and I don't know if AIG 10 years ago was an example, because you know, most of their company was regulated as an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
But where there was over-regulation, over-leveraging, that does sound like a business decision that would have been fully disclosed, and I don't see how people could have seen that, so I don't see a criminal problem. There has to be some sort of lie. There has to be some sort of cheating or stealing, and that's just, stupidity is okay on the criminal as far as criminal prosecution goes.
Stupidity is okay, maybe, but Frank Bowman, you've said to my crew here that these huge financial firms, the people there, were consciously taking risks with whole countries, whole economies. Prosecution has to be a possibility, you've said.
Well, what I think is that given the size and the reach of modern corporations and particularly modern financial institutions, and we're getting a demonstration of exactly how large their reach is, it seems to me that those who run such entities have a large social responsibility, which perhaps has been disregarded with an overemphasis on a short-term focus on the share price and responsibility strictly to shareholders. I think that people who run institutions like that, who hold so much of the world economy and our collective social and economic well-being in their hands, have a broader social responsibility. And when they engage in conduct which can be characterized as reckless, which is to say consciously taking unjustifiable risks, not only with their own corporations, but with the world economy. And if you have that kind of behavior coupled with provable violations of criminal offenses, or criminal statutes, I think there's a strong case to be using criminal statutes and imprisonment against people like that, yes.
So you've said sometimes you can't just say, okay, give us back part of the money. You have to say, we're taking everything from you now. All the money, even your freedom, you've caused vast harm. It's time to punish you now. Do you think we're going to hear that message, see that message delivered in this season, Frank Bowman?
I think in some cases, sure. And again, I think Roger has nicely indicated a number of ways in which, in his article, officers and and CEOs of large corporations and may find themselves subject to criminal liability. Sometimes the criminal liability is going to stem directly from the kind of risk-taking that gone bad that has got us in our current economic circumstance. But as Roger has pointed out, sometimes the crimes that will be uncovered by criminal investigators won't necessarily be directly related to the downfall of the corporation. And then you have interesting questions about prosecutorial policy. I mean, should you, should you be prosecuting, Al Capone for tax evasion when we really want him because he's a bootlegger and a murderer? And similar kinds of questions arise for prosecutors, I think, will arise in these cases. And that's where I think my point about broader criminal recklessness comes in. If you can establish there has been this kind of reckless conduct of, globe-spanning corporations, then I think the argument for prosecuting people on crimes less than directly related to that recklessness becomes stronger.
You can be sure it's not the last we'll hear on that theme. Let's get a call from Greenwich, Connecticut. Axel, you're on the air. What do you know, Axel?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It seems very simple to me. You take high-risk investments like the subprimes and convert them to AAA Standard & Poor's ratings and sell them as high quality. That's fraud.
Do you expect criminal prosecution? A lot of palaces gone up in your town, Greenwich, in the last 10, 20 years, and no small part of it off of Wall Street in that time. Do you expect people, paddy wagons out front?
Sure do. I'd like to see it, too. There are a lot of empty houses right now. The attitude of these people is very simple, too. I was a broker at one time, and my manager came to me and said, never say thank you. It's a sign of weakness.
Just take the money.
Just take the money. That's the attitude.
Axel, thank you very much for calling. Roger Parloff, what about it? You're at Fortune. You talk to people in these circles. On the prosecution side, on the management side, is there determination to look seriously at the criminal side here? Are they well into that? Is there fear on the management side, of the clink of handcuffs here?
Sure, there is. I mean, there's an enormous public appetite for it, for prosecutions. And if it comes to prosecutions, the juries are going to be angry. The juries are going to have, this is a situation where the taxpayer has paid trillions of dollars in bailouts and they've lost trillions of dollars in market cap. And they're sitting on the jury. So they've got a personal stake in what happened here. It's not an attractive prospect, and they're petrified about it. But realistically, which things are likely to lead to criminal prosecution? For instance, the caller is right that they were...
Sounds like we lost Roger there for a second. Frank Bowman, if you were in position, would you be sort of sharpening your knife right now to sort of dig in and see what's there, or are you worried this is witch hunt fever?
No, I was a federal prosecutor for a long time, and although I think that federal prosecutors, like anybody else, are not immune from the currents of public sentiment, I do have a good deal of faith in the professionalism of the Department of Justice. At least the line prosecutors are going to be doing these investigations. And I think two things can be said about that. First, and I think Roger may have made this point earlier with respect to the Cuomo investigation, there is an immense public service that prosecutors can do by using the tools available uniquely to them, the grand jury, the leverage that they have because of high criminal sentences to get people to cooperate, so forth and so on. There's a tremendous public service that prosecutors can do by simply shining daylight on the operations of some of these corporations. But once they've done that, I have no doubt that prosecutors will use good professional judgment and not prosecute folks simply based on emotion.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the case for criminal prosecutions in the Wall Street meltdown and maybe soon at AIG, the case for and some of the case against as well in this hour. Roger Parloff joins us. He's a senior editor at Fortune Magazine. Frank Bowman is here, professor now at the University of Missouri Law School, former deputy district attorney in Denver, done a lot of white-collar prosecution in Florida in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Let's get a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Kaysen. Kaysen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Fantastic show. You're, you know, definitely on the pulse of the nation with this topic.
What do you think, Kaysen?
I don't mean to be incendiary with this comment, but the word
I bet
like
you do somehow. I bet you do.
Yeah, the word I'd like to see kicking around with this conversation is treason. I mean, the CIA has stated that the biggest threat to our national security is currently the financial meltdown, okay? I mean, this has been a debacle that's... I mean, you're talking about the world economy. I'd like to focus on the United States economy here and talk about how these people have really managed to, you know, create havoc unforseen.
It's big pain and it's wide, but treason...
behavior.
Treason? I mean, that makes it sound like, I don't know, guillotines and firing squads down by the Bull on Wall Street. Is that really where you want to go?
I'm not talking about guillotines and firing squads, but I'd like to see this conversation go in a place where we're taking into account the hugeness of this fraud and the magnitude of this greed. And I really feel that it is a kind of treason.
Kaysen, we've got it. And let us hold that word right there. Get another call here from Harlan, Iowa, and Joshua. Joshua, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Well, what do you think?
I'm having a little trouble understanding how you're going to be able to prosecute companies like this when you can't find impartial juries or impartial judges, since everyone has been affected by this.
And the President of the United States has called some of this behavior, I think he used the word outrageous, maybe it was something stronger than that. How do you get an impartial jury? That's a good question. We'll get to it. And Sebastian in Detroit, you're on the air, Sebastian.
Hey, Tom, we love you in Detroit. We're, and as you know, we've been punched in the face and we've been kicked with you know, automotive industry being here. But I'll make it as plain as simple. I want blood. And the bottom line for me is that I want sort of emotional facts, if you will. I mean, I want to go after everyone at this point. I mean, I believe, in my opinion, I believe that there are 200 Madoffs or 2,000 Madoffs that we've not even seen. This, you know, I even want to get to the point where we bring back, put Henry Paulson back on the stand. And really, you know, at this point, Tom, the fact of the matter is, I don't care how much it's going to cost a taxpayer. I've already spent... we've already spent $170 billion for this company.
Yeah.
And you mean to tell me that we cannot? I don't care if this takes 2 or 3 years or 5 years. This is so ridiculous and so frustrating that I've gotten my house lost and a lot of my friends and we're going by the books in Michigan. And the fact that the financial industry is really just so disappointing. I mean, this is so frustrating. What was that movie, Tom? There Will Be Blood? I do.
Sebastian, you make it loud, clear, and plain. Let's pick these up. Frank Bowman, Roger Parloff. There's the cry of treason. The I want blood. There will be blood from Detroit. And where will you find an impartial jury out of Iowa? Frank Bowman, you're the prosecutor. As you hear that, how do you take it on board? Where do you think that steers prosecutors?
Well, I think the depth of the public outrage is considerable, and it's justifiable. On the other hand, and to answer the jury question, I think finding impartial juries is always difficult in high-profile cases, as any criminal prosecutions involving the prominent actors in this crisis would be. But that's what prosecutors and judges are trained to do, and I have considerable confidence that jury selection processes could be devised to ensure impartial juries. So I'm not terribly concerned about that. It's not a unique problem. But I do think there is, there is a risk that the urge to get blood overcomes people's good judgment. And again, while I think there is a definite place for criminal prosecution, we also have to remember that criminal prosecution can only be brought if there is evidence of actual crime, and although that may be forthcoming and probably will be in many cases, you can't prosecute people just because they screwed up, however colossally. You know, you can't suspend the rule of law simply because there's an economic meltdown. So while I'm in favor of prosecutions where they're warranted, I think you have to be level-headed about how you proceed, and remember that one of the principal things we need to do forward is going forward is not to get heads on a plate, but to restore the financial system, and then as part of that to pass regulatory measures that ensure that we do not have a repeat of this problem in the future.
Roger Parloff, you've written that there's a context of pitchfork rebellion out there, and we can certainly hear that right here today. And not just here, it's sort of, you know, open your window anywhere and you can hear it. But I think people are going to want to understand what's actually going on, Roger. You do us a service if you could take us into some of the nitty-gritty here. What of individual investigations that are known to be going on, what kind of targets, what companies, what level of officer within those companies, what sort of cases being considered or investigated now? Give us a sampling, Roger.
Well, we know that subpoenas have been issued to Lehman Brothers, AIG, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, of course, many of the mortgage originators, Washington Mutual, Golden West, Countrywide. And, of course, there were two indictments of the hedge fund managers at Bear Stearns. That sort of covers. I mean, there's a lot of activity going on. In fairness, after they issue subpoenas, if they sort of decide, you know what, there's nothing here, they don't ever say that. So I don't know if all of those are how lively all of those prosecutions investigations are. Whether all of them are still red hot. Similarly, they don't tell us, yeah, this one's for real. We're, you know, and you could wait 2 years. It could be gestating for 2 years or something before you see the indictment. So, but those are going underway. We know that Lehman Brothers has at least three investigations going on. One by the U.S. Attorney in Manhattan, one by the U.S. Attorney in Brooklyn, one by the U.S. Attorney in Newark. Each of those, each is looking at a slightly different thing. One in New Jersey stems from a big and you see recurring types of problems. Like some of these companies had big fundraisings not long before they folded. So Lehman Brothers raised $6 billion a few months before it entered bankruptcy. So,
and they didn't do that by saying, we're going down the tubes, you can join us.
Exactly. They issued some rather upbeat, statements. And the New Jersey pension funds were one of the ones that bought Lehman late in the game. And they put $182 million in and I think immediately lost $115 million. So, in fact, yesterday they just sued civilly, New Jersey did, over that. But that's part of what the criminal prosecution in New Jersey is about.
They're going after emails, as you said, it'll be presumably looking for evidence that at the same time they were inviting more money in, they may have been saying privately backstage, this puppy's in trouble, or to quote a former president, this sucker's going down.
Yes, that it would be that sort of thing. And in fact, that's exactly what the prosecution in the Bear Stearns hedge fund case is about. That's a situation where rather upbeat statements were made to shareholders, and they have emails, internal emails that seem quite alarmed about what's going on. But we need to be careful about prejudging those situations.
Yeah, Frank, here's something that's been on my mind. There's so much outrage over the bonuses at AIG right now. But, of course, there were gigantic bonuses, much bigger than these, going out the door for years when this business was just going along before it tumbled and stumbled. Now, I don't know if that's an issue of worthy of criminal investigation, but it certainly seems, Frank, that there are, you know, we ought to be taking a step back here looking at the bigger picture. It wasn't just last Friday that bonuses went out, and it wasn't the first time they went out for credit default swaps and all the rest. They've gone out and on a larger scale for a long time.
Well, actually, my sense regarding the bonuses is that, to a large degree, this is a red herring. I mean, it is insulting to the American public that, particularly the AIG, pays out bonuses to the very unit that created so much trouble, and it is insulting to us that bonuses got paid out to other people in analogous firms and analogous positions that created a problem. But and perhaps the existence of a bonus culture, you know, helped create the atmosphere in which all of this flourished.
Perhaps. I mean, they were making tens of millions of dollars, maybe, of these leaders, hundreds, some of them, who were right in the heart of this.
Right. And I think that's, you know, that's worthy of our serious consideration. But remember, the core of the problem here is, you know, we have a world crisis that's, I think, basically based on default risk. Basically, the odds that borrowers or counterparties are going to fail to pay their obligations on loans or other contracts. And the problem that we're currently experiencing right now starts with, you know, the default risk of home buyers. People got loans, there's a high risk they can't pay back. Underwriting standards get abandoned. People with no jobs or low-wage jobs get home loans.
But
why?
Those loans are being bundled and pushed out the door in the hundreds of millions, in the billions, by the same guys who were then raking in, you know, $20 million bonuses, $40 million bonuses?
Right. You have a securitization of all of those mortgages, and all of them, I mean, the whole house of cards rested on an assessment of default risk, the notion that the homeowners wouldn't default because housing prices would always rise, and that in any case, by bundling all these things into securities, that the total security is valuable even though it contains some junk in it. And essentially what you have is a systematic undervaluation of the default risk for these securities. Now, that is, I think, primarily a regulatory defect. I mean, you have a dramatic failure across the board of all kinds of internal and external, public and private regulatory mechanisms to fail to appreciate the degree of risk that was being taken on by all sorts of institutions.
Yeah.
That's primarily a regulatory problem, and that, I think, is at least where the major focus should be.
Maybe so. But by the end, Roger Parloff, I mean, you remind us, you know, they had mortgages, subprime mortgages, where the borrowers couldn't even make the first month payments, and still the game was going on. That's going to leave a lot of people scratching their heads. Let's get a call from Aiken, South Carolina, and Paula. Paula, you're on the air.
Hi. I know earlier someone had said that everybody was out for blood. I don't think the average citizen is out for blood so much as what they consider justice. And these bonuses, these $20 million bonuses, they're just obscene when people can't meet their mortgage. I'm not really so much a student of economics, as a matter of fact, not at all. But I am a student of history, and I wonder if these fellows that did these things have ever heard the expression, let them eat cake, and know what happened to the folks that was directed at.
Yeah, the cake's gone now, isn't it? Or maybe a little bit still being passed out with those bonuses on Friday. Let me get another here from Ben in Columbia, South Carolina. Ben, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to make the point that there's a tremendous focus on a lot of things going on there, because there's a lot of issues in the country. They're mainly centric to the economy, and that's a bad thing. I understand that. But I think we need to get a real focus focus on integrity and accountability among our group, rank and file in Washington. When the President of the United States appoints the Secretary of Treasury as a tax delinquent, what kind of message is that sending to the American people?
Ben, we hear it. And a lot of appointments for a lot of years, integrity is a word we heard Chuck Grassley say earlier. Senator Grassley say he'd like to see more of Japanese style. Frank Bowman, I guess I take away from you a lot of caution, but also the sense that this criminal prosecution does need to be there at the at bottom, if necessary, to, if necessary, put some metal teeth in that demand for integrity.
Absolutely. I mean, don't mistake my insistence that regulation is an important part of the solution to our current problems for a lack of desire to prosecute people when they've committed crimes. I'm a prosecutor at heart. I always have been, and I believe that prosecution and the criminal law has an important role here. If the last decade has taught us anything, it is that the powers of the Justice Department have to be used both aggressively when appropriate, but also judiciously to make sure that they're not used in the service of witch hunts. So I think I stand somewhere in the middle.
Well, the fire is hot right now. They're certainly going to feel it at their back. Roger Parloff at Fortune Magazine, I expect you may be reporting in that arena for a long time. We appreciate your being with us today, Roger. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Frank Bowman at the University of Missouri Law School, joining us from Columbia, Missouri. Mr. Bowman, thank you very much for being here today.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.